I work as a private investigator in Vermont with my friend Jesse. We used to work in documentary production together in New York years ago. Same skill set. Ask lots of questions. Figure out what happened. Try to get a glimpse at why. We moved up here together, Jesse and I. We stayed. We had kids. Both single mothers now. We work for lawyers, mostly defense lawyers. Some public defenders, some private. Drug cases, domestic abuse, occasionally a murder. So, we drive. Sometimes drive for hours just to leave a card in someone's door. We drive a lot.
I called my girlfriend and I said, I'm going to be going to jail next week. She said, well, you got to come see me. Well, I don't have a ride. Well, you can figure something out, she said. So what I did is I was working at a car, used car dealership, and I had the keys to a car there. So I walked over to work. My boss is standing on the porch talking to a customer. Walk up to this blazer, hop in the car, start up the car. He's standing on the porch staring at me. He's like this. He lifts his hands like, what? And I peel out and take off. Gone. The car runs out of gas. So I pull over on the side of the road. And I look on this porch. It's got a porch light outside. And I see a bicycle on the porch. And I'm like, I'm going to go steal this bicycle. So I run up, grab this bike, run back out to the road. I get on this bike.
There aren't as many degrees of separation as I'd like to think between me and the clients. I drive away from the jail or from an interview at the end of that dirt road. When I get it, the guy made a choice. Maybe not a great one, but nothing terrible. An understandable choice given the circumstances. And that led to another choice. Then one more. And now he's in jail, or his brother's dead, or he's being deported. And that's what happened. This, then this, now this. And your stepdad?
Well, I don't like him for the simple fact that he tried hitting my mom.
And was that an isolated event?
I'm sure it happened a lot more than what I saw. But the fact that I saw it made it 10 times worse.
So, you seem pretty mad. I mean, you got a lot to be mad about, it sounds like.
I do.
And so, when you set off at the age of... How old were you when you were 12, when you went off?
It was shortly before my 12th birthday. It was like 4 months before my 12th birthday. Just got home from school. Walk through the door and I see him draw his hand back as he's getting ready to punch my mom. Before he had the chance to, I grabbed him right by his wrist and smashed his head off the fridge. He started getting mouthy and he tried to hit me. That didn't fly too well. He got hit twice before he could even grab a hold of me. Then right as soon as he grabbed a hold of me, I twisted him down and as he was down on the ground, I kicked him in the face. My mom called the ambulance. I just went outside, got on my four-wheeler, and took off.
One day, Jesse and I stole a cat, a kitten. It was November, and it was cold. We were doing interviews for a murder case in Lamoille County. Jesse had been working on the case for months. She'd already been up the road where the stabbing happened and gotten stuck. She was stuck in a hailstorm, standing in the abandoned shack where the guy had lived, the stabber, our client. This day, we were going to try and interview one of his neighbors. The thing is, if you live way out on a Class 4 road without running water or electricity, there's a good chance you live there because you don't want anyone stopping by. We reached Jeter's house just as it was starting to snow and the light was fading. It was deep in the woods. A trailer with a plywood outbuilding and a lot of garbage, some of it bagged, some of it just piled up. We counted 7 dogs tied to stakes in the woods near the house. There were slices of white bread on the ground, just outside reach of the dog's chain leads. It was getting dark. And then we saw a tiny kitten, the size you could fit in your hand. It was white. We stood there for a while in the dark, and then Jesse said, "Should I take it?" And I said, "Yeah, maybe you should take it. Let's take it." So we took the kitten. We left, and I held the kitten on my lap and Jesse drove. The kitten smelled like garbage. Can you talk about your mom?
Yeah. I love her. She's the only woman's name that's tattooed on my body and the only one that ever will be because she can't break my heart.
And did your mother come and visit you while you were there?
She came and visited me once, 3 weeks before I got out.
What was that like?
It was nice. I was sitting there waiting when they come down to get you for visit. So, you know, I'm sitting there changed up. I'm all shaved up. Nice haircut, you know, waiting for my mom to come see me and clean clothes. And it was, they come at 7:30 to 9:30. And sitting there waiting, you know, the guard and cop keeps coming in, getting everybody out for their visit. Waiting there, I'm on the last cell. And waiting there, and he came and got the last guy, and about 20 minutes goes by. Shit, I don't think my mom's here. I don't think she's coming. She came at like 8:30. She got there. You know, she was drunk, but, you know, you gotta love her. It's a thought that counts. She did make it up there to see me, regardless of what she was doing on her way there.
Before I go to pick up my son at preschool, I always feel like I should perform some kind of ritual cleansing, some bit of voodoo that'll make a boundary between me and the stories. But there isn't any boundary. There aren't any bad guys. There's just, this happened, then this happened, now this. There was another case, a man accused of raping his 12-year-old granddaughter. I met him for an interview in a small attorney room at the prison, 2 chairs and a desk. The front guard let me in and I sat down and waited. We'll call him John. John came in a different door. He sat down and I explained that I was his investigator. It starts out politely, the interview. I asked him about his childhood. John's from a big farm family in the Northeast Kingdom. As a kid, he milked before and after school, sugared in the spring. He's describing this life to me. He's settling in. He thinks I'm interested in what he's saying about his life. And he's right, I am interested. And I can almost forget that my job is to see how his stories can help a lawyer build a case against someone else. And because I can almost forget that, the people I talk with can forget. It's a trick I play on both of us. So John talked about his life. His father he loved. His mother, she never wanted to live on a farm, never wanted to be a mother. And 9 kids later, she still didn't want to be a mother. Still alive, in her 90s, he said. Still mean, he said. I asked him if he thought I should talk with her. Well, you can talk to her, but she'll blow so much smoke up your ass it'll give you colon cancer. After about an hour, I asked him about the granddaughter. She's the reason for the meeting, but we'd avoided talking about her, like somehow we could avoid that topic altogether, and I could leave, and we'd both be happy we got to know each other a little bit here in prison. But finally, I ask the hard questions. I can never believe I have to ask these questions. Like, did she offer to blow you in exchange for the crack? Was that before or after you pushed her out the window? And in this case, how old was your granddaughter when your relationship changed? He looked like he wanted to disappear, like all the ideas about himself, as a farmer, then a truck driver, grandfather, they were all inverting, bleeding into one another. It was a long, long pause. And then he sighed. He started telling me the story of an attraction that developed between a grandfather and a granddaughter. Hard to believe, I know, but there was no getting around it. He lived in the farmhouse, and she lived with her parents in the trailer on the property. The school bus dropped her off at the end of the road, he said. Her parents worked in town. She'd come to my house after school. It started when she was 16, he said. 16? 16, not a day before she was 16. I told her not to come, but she came anyway. Oh, you were in love? Oh, yes. I was her knight in shining armor, he said. Oh. I felt sick on the drive home when I remembered the case file. Years of molestation that started when the girl was 7, some of it brutal. It wasn't the brutality that made me sick, though there was that. I was sick because it was a love story. His true love story. I drove the back way home that day, through Thetford, Verscher, Chelsea, small villages and feed stores and general stores and hardware stores, and men on tractors and men leaning on Ford F-250s and barns and Take Back Vermont signs and an occasional dead deer in the road and rolling farm country. I grew up here. It's beautiful like a postcard picture, but it's the only picture I'm on the inside of. And if you ask the question, why do you live here? The answer would just be, because it's where I live. But today, on this day, after this interview in the prison, the country felt remote and sad. And when I stopped to buy a soda at the gas station, I didn't want to look at the lady at the counter, and I wasn't sure if it was something about her I didn't want to know, or something about me.